Once upon a time, there were two brothers, Cain and Havel. Aww. They were twins. And Cain was a man of the soil, a farmer, carrying on the family trade of his daddy, Red, who started out as a gardener before branching out to bigger and better things. Cain had the best land, the best fields, and he worked very hard every day until harvest time. He was a go-getter. In fact, his name meant, I got it. It's mine. And his mama, Chava, named him after she gave birth to him because she was so proud of her work getting him born. Cain, as the oldest, was his mama's favorite. And he was just like his mama. Whatever he wanted, he worked hard to get it so that he could succeed. He had the best looking fruit, the biggest vegetables. Here, show off your fruit and vegetables here. And a wealth of grain. He was doing so great and everybody knew it. Havel, on the other hand, the younger brother, he did not have it so good. Everyone say, aw. Havel was not the favorite. His mama named him empty, insubstantial, nothing. Don't got it, whatever it was. So we've got Chaim, who got it. Havel, don't got it. He was just an afterthought after his brother Cain was born. He was probably the smaller twin and probably sickly growing up. But in any case, because he was a nobody as far as his mama was concerned, he didn't get the best farmland down by the river. He got the leftover land, the wilderness. So every day he wandered around the wilderness, and farming was not for him. Instead, Havel was a keeper of sheep, a shepherd. Here, let's give the sheep to Havel. Ooh, nice. And you can't keep sheep around a garden. They'll just eat it down to nothing, right? So Havel wasn't around the family much. He was just out there with the sheep, stinky with the sheep, living out in the field with the sheep. But every day he cared for them, he protected them, he did whatever it was concerned to keep it safe. And he just didn't see his family that much. The sheep were kind of his family. He just kept out of everybody's way. But Havel was successful too in his own way. All right, come out here, God. One day, all his care for the sheep and love for them paid off. As summer began and harvest time grew closer, Havel knew it was time to bring an offering to the Lord. He was careful to do it just like his mama and daddy had told him, because one time the Lord had showed them what to do when it was time to make a sacrifice. Havel sacrificed his best male lambs. He took the fattest and the best meat, lamb bacon, lamb chops, fat lamb's tail, leg of lamb, and he set it all on the altar before the Lord. Come here, Havel. You gotta set the lambs on the altar here. Just put them at God's feet there. That'll be the altar. Yep. This is kind of an inside joke because one time Pastor John played God in a Broadway production, a play in Martinsville at the high school. All right. And the Lord looked with favor on Havel's sacrifice. For once, Havel did something right. Everybody clap for Havel. Yeah. So Cain also decided, hey, it's time for me to bring my offering to the Lord. But he did not have any sheep to sacrifice, like the Lord had shown his parents to do, and like the Lord showed Havel to do. Yeah, he could have asked his brother Havel, but why do that when he had all this beautiful grain and vegetables and fruit? He worked so hard to grow all this, it should be good enough. because that's the way he just wanted to do it. So he gathered it together and brought it as an offering, but the Lord just looked at it and shook his head. It was not what he had asked Cain to do, so he turned his face away. This hurt Cain's feelings. For the first time in his life, he wasn't good enough, and his hard work was all for nothing. His face fell, but not only that, it made Cain angry. How could his brother Havel's offering of stinky sheep be acceptable when this beautiful fruit wasn't? He stewed, he pouted, and he huffed and puffed until finally the Lord had to speak to him.
Cain, why are you making that face? Did you do what I asked? If you did what was right, you would be smiling right now. Look out. Sin is crouching at the door like a lion ready to pounce. You have to master it so it doesn't overpower you and eat you up.
Cain did not answer. He stormed off to look for his brother out in the hills.
Cain, what's wrong?
Oh, it's nothing. Let's go take a walk together. Leave your sheep and just come out to the field with me. Oh, it's gonna be great.
So Havel went with Cain out to the field, and when they were far enough out where nobody was looking, Cain jumped his brother and shanked him. Took out all his anger on his brother. And then he just went about his business like nothing ever happened. Didn't tell nobody. It's like it never happened. But the Lord found Cain and asked him,
"Where's your brother?"
I don't know. Don't know. Nope. Am I his shepherd? Nope.
What have you done? From now on, your farming days are over. As punishment for attacking Havel, you're going to be homeless and never grow another vegetable for the rest of your life.
No.
And Cain was really sorry. He didn't want to leave his home or the presence of the Lord where he could talk to him every day. Without his garden, he couldn't grow his own food. He couldn't be successful the way he was before. He'd have to ask other people for food instead and be totally dependent on them, even if they treated him badly the same way he treated his brother.
This is too much.
I can't handle this!
And because God loved Cain, even though he had done a bad thing, God had mercy on him. He protected Cain so that he could find a new family. And Cain did become successful in a totally different way and went on to build a whole bunch of cities and had kids and grandkids. And they went out and built even more cities. And he became a carpenter after that. The end. Thank you, guys. That was great. So you probably guessed it. Have you figured out which Bible story this one is? Cain and Abel. And that's actually, that is how you pronounce their names. So this was some questions and food for thought here. You know, Why was Havel's sacrifice acceptable, but Cain was rejected? Anybody want to venture a guess? No cheating from the pastor. You can't answer anything. Blood sacrifice. What else? Lamb of God. Attitude. There we go. It's like, this is more obvious. He didn't do what he was asked to do. God was very specific in Genesis. He sacrificed a lamb when Adam and Eve, or in this case, Red and Chava, when they messed up and they sinned, God killed a sheep for them and clothed them. And he made the first sacrifice himself and showed them how to do it. So Cain was like, whatever, I don't need to do it God's way. I got my own stuff, my own methods. I'm just going to do it my way. I worked hard for it. And he really didn't understand that his attitude was wrong. And but we have this attitude sometimes ourselves. The way I do it and what I have to offer is just fine. I don't need to do what God asked me to do. Some of these rules in the Bible, they're for other people. You know, it's good for them. They're antiquated. But, you know, I got my own way of offering stuff to God. I got my own way of walking with him. And I don't need to make any changes. And that other stuff that people do, sometimes that's a little extreme, and I'm just going to do things my way. Wow. So I have that attitude personally a whole lot. So God was always speaking to me while I was working on this message, because if anybody who knows me knows that I'm the type of person that, as far as I'm concerned, ever since I was a kid, rules, they only apply to me if I like them. If they benefit me, I'll follow the rule. If the rule, I don't like it because it doesn't benefit me the way that I want it or doesn't work for me, I just don't. I just do my own thing. And other people just have to kind of live with it. And that's just how I feel a lot of times. So, and that gets me in trouble all the time, just like Cain. And I like to go out and get things and do things and have it, you know, right there in front of me and have all my work pay off and then, you know, just brag to everybody about what a great thing that I did and how hard I worked and I'm successful because of it and you should be like me. The other thing is that we have a tendency to have blind spots with our attitudes and sin and you know, sometimes we're just like, I don't have any sin that requires sacrifice from the Lord. I don't have any sin that requires forgiveness from God. But, you know, the reality is a lot of times our rules for sin and is totally different from how God sees it. And we got to be willing to listen to him and let him speak to us. And the question there is what do we do if we sin? And what do we do when we make mistakes? And how does Jesus play into all of this? All right. So let's see here. Let's take a look real quick at Hebrews 12. I'm going to kind of be jumping around here. Well, first of all, in the book of Genesis, chapter 4 is where the story of Cain and Abel is. There's more into it. I kind of made it less violent because of because I was aiming this skit at the kids. But, you know, it talks about when the Lord goes to Cain, he says, I hear the blood of Abel crying out from the ground. And he cursed Cain because he said, well, actually, it wasn't the Lord really cursing Cain. It was more like the ground itself cursed Cain because it drank and received the blood of innocence. And as a result, the ground was going to rebel and refuse to give to Cain all of the good things that it gave him before, which is kind of an interesting concept with sowing and reaping, that sometimes when bad things happen to us, it's a result, a consequence of our action, not necessarily because God is cursing us or punishing us. Sometimes it's just like a rebound from what we did caused repercussions. Sometimes that's an attitude that I have to deal with people or myself, is like, okay, this thing that's happening to you that you don't like, it's not because God hates you and is trying to punish you or that people hate you. It's because this thing that you did was really wrong. It has like a natural consequence that comes after it. And we see that a lot in the world with people that do hurtful things to others, is sometimes it comes back on them in a way they don't like. And people around here call it karma, you know, or what goes around comes around. sowing and reaping is what the Bible calls it, and that's a real thing that we got to be aware of sometimes. And all right. So, but Hebrews 12:2, you have Jesus, the founder and perfecter of faith. And that word "are" is not actually there. So it's the founder and perfecter of faith, like a big general overarching faith that they use the word "are" because it's inclusive, all of us together, but the whole church, all of the righteous, their faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and is seated at the right hand of the throne of God. Skipping over to 24. To Jesus, the mediator of the new covenant, and to the sprinkled blood that speaks a better word than the blood of Abel. So yeah, the blood of Abel, when the ground was crying out, that was the revenge. Right. Like, you were hurtful, you were hateful, you did something really wrong, and now you're going to suffer the consequences of being homeless and hunted like a wild animal, and everything you touch will be destroyed. Nothing will work out for you ever again. The blood of Jesus was different because it's voluntary. Jesus signed up for this. He wasn't like Havel, who was surprised, where he was just hanging out with his brother, and his brother plotted and schemed and pretended nothing was wrong in order to attack him. It wasn't like that. Jesus saw it coming years in advance, and he knew it was going to happen to him, and he just decided to go for it anyway because that was his love for us, because he wanted to present an offering that was better than Abel's offering or Cain's offering that would cover everybody, so that the whole cycle with Cain and Abel could be broken forever and nobody would ever have to go through that, all the pain and the hardship they went through as brothers, ever again. That was his goal. And he speaks blessing. His blood speaks blessing over us. Even though it shouldn't, it should blame us for all the wrong things that we did. It doesn't. He blesses us. With every breath that he took on the cross, he was interceding for us, cheering us on, wanting his kids to do well, to be successful, to be in his love, and to be free from sin, which is crouching at everybody's door. All right, so now to get into a little bit more background. When I was studying Genesis, which was a challenge because Bruce ripped out the first three chapters. but Adam and Eve, very interesting words in the garden. Adam, his name means dirt, you've probably heard, but it also means red. It's the same root word for the word blood that they have in Hebrew. The word ground, the word blood, and then also the word for like meat, and they all mean the same, they all have the same root word, and there's also like a sense of like authorship of all the generations having to do, like if you put an A on it, make it Adama, then you get some sort of life-giving birth person at the same time. So it's a very complex word, but we would just, but today if he lived in the South, he would just, they just call him Red. So what they would call him. And Eve, she was also very interesting. Her name means fragility, delicate, fire. And also there's a meaning to it that has like life, just like a fire is alive. But also just like a sense of very fragile and delicate, something that can easily be broken, but also something that's, you know, very precious and beautiful at the same time. So this is kind of how the Bible sets us up to think about the first woman and the first mother, is which, you know, says a lot about God's attitudes towards women, that they're beautiful, valuable, but very opposite of man, and that men, you know, the ground is very stable, steady. Women are more like a fire. They're on the move. And that can be both good and bad. And then Eve was very, you know, I never really thought about Eve's word choices and how she treated her two sons, but it's very, there's a whole lot of, I wrote a lot into the skit that's just basically based on the context and the wording, the way things were said. Like, I never really thought about the fact that Cain and Abel were twins. And you've got that repeated theme in the Bible because you've got Jacob and Esau being twins later. And so it's a theme that is carried on and expounded on more and more in the Bible. And the serpent is very interesting. The serpent is in chapter 4, but you don't really think about it. And I'm going to explain why here. Like, oh, we listen to a lot of Michael Heiser podcasts in our house, where he's a Hebrew scholar that likes to talk about scripture in depth with cultural and historical references to help you, basically to help you understand the Bible, because it's got a lot of weird stuff in it that just doesn't make sense to us today. But the serpent in ancient Babylonian and Mesopotamian myth was a creature that was half lion, half snake. So it looked kind of like a giraffe with a long snaky neck, but it had like the teeth of a lion, and it had a lion's long slinky tail. And a lot of times the serpent had wings, or it had the face of a human, in particular the face of a king, of a man with a big beard, big giant eyes, and a big tall wig. And because that's what kings wore back then, was giant wigs. And so you have, when you think about the serpent coming to Adam and Eve, you have to think about a huge, dazzling creature with the paws and claws of a lion, the scaled, glistening body of a snake, the tail of a lion, and the mouth of a human able to speak with, like, fangs. And these were creatures that in the art were depicted in the throne room of the king, usually one on either side, or them lying at the feet of the at the foot of the throne, or they would make artwork of them on doorways and gates to cities, as like they were guardians, supposed to represent like protecting spirits, and they were representing royalty. So when you think about the serpent coming to Adam and Eve, you also have to think about, this may be like heaven's guard dog. This is something that was probably more like a cherubim that you also hear mentioned in the Bible a lot. That was a creature that lived in the presence of God and the glory of God and hung out in the throne room and was supposed to just kind of be there as like a watcher of what was going on. And but like a lot of dogs in real life, he just got really uppity. And so we just got a puppy, and he's a really big puppy, and he's getting bigger every day. And he is very naughty when it comes to the kids. He does not respect the kids, and so we have to train him all the time, nonstop, to be respectful of humans and not get above his little status as a dog. If you let him, he will be on the sofa. If you let him, he will be on the bed. He will jump up and take mouth out of the baby, take food straight out of the baby's mouth and run with it straight out the door and eat it. He will jump on my son Bruce, knock him over and lick his face. He will also take the shoes. He will take my son's clothes, his diapers, his toys. Anything that my children have, he wants. He's jealous of it. He's jealous of everything they own. He wants it all, and he does not want to share with them. And so Josh and I have to constantly work with this puppy to teach him that, no, you are a dog. You live on the floor. You have a kennel. You have a bed in your kennel. And you have special food that's just for you, and you cannot steal the food out of the children's mouths. You cannot take their dinner out of their hand or jump on the table and take it right off their plate. And this is kind of like in the Garden of Eden. You have the serpent that when God crafts man, his children, which are totally different from the angels and other creatures that live in God's court in heaven, like humans were God's children. We are his kids. We get a special status from everything else in creation and that we are elevated above creation and we are loved in a way that is different. And you see that when God brings Adam to the garden and has him name all the animals and tells him to rule and have dominion over the earth and over all the creatures and bring, basically establish the kingdom of God and his kingship over all of creation. And the serpent hated that. He was jealous. He did not want to share any of God's glory with anybody else. And so he did everything in his power to take everything from Adam and Eve, to take from them everything they had been given by God so that he could have it his alone. And that's how we got the great cosmic battle between good and evil. And a lot of it has to do with jealousy and possession, which is why I was highlighting Cain's attitude towards his brother Abel. And he had to have that kind of, he really had to despise his brother to kill him like that out of jealousy. It's amazing. Totally amazing. And when God turns to Cain and says, sin is crouching at your door, like the Amplified version of the Bible really does say crouching like a lion, because that's the way the language phrases it, in a way to, you have to think of sin as being like an actual, like a lion crouching, ready to pounce and take over. And sin is like that. It's an attitude that we can have that can suddenly overpower our good senses and our wisdom that we have from the Lord. It's a strong, powerful emotion that will just kind of creep in and sometimes just take over. It can take over our thought processes. It can take over our attitudes. It can become very obsessive. And it can cause people to act in ways that are very uncharacteristic of themselves, or act in ways that are very unhealthy or harmful to others or harmful to themselves. That's just what it does. And the Lord loved Cain so much that he warned him ahead of time to guard your mind. Watch out for this type of sin that's going to come at you and try to control you. Don't let it control you. You have to master it and overpower it. Just like we have to control our dog, that he has no control over him. He'll just be wild and destroy the entire house and terrorize the kids. We have to master him and have him sit, lie down, understand his boundaries. And we got to do that with sin in our lives, with the flesh. It requires the cross. And Cain is so interesting. The story is really about Cain and not about Abel. Was Cain somebody that was totally godless? No. Was he somebody that had never experienced the presence of God or didn't know who he was? No, we're talking about a guy that his parents walked with God and spoke with him every single day. Adam was the most interesting, probably, example of a powerful believer in the Lord who was like a righteous man who walked with the Lord every day. Even though he messed up really badly, he had a really strong, intimate relationship with God. So did Cain. So did Abel. Cain, in his own way, was doing things that he thought would please the Lord, and that was his desire, was to please God. However, his desire to have his own way in everything was even stronger than his desire to please God. And that's where we got to watch out. Like, I grew up in church. I know the Lord. I know his voice. I hear his voice. I talk to him. Sometimes I do what God asks me to do. Sometimes I don't. Just because I'm a Christian and I grew up in church does not mean that I don't have times and moments in which I totally act like Cain or Cain and do my own thing and throw a hissy fit and mess everything up. And that's what we got to watch out for as Christians. As opposed to somebody who grew up totally godless. Sometimes we look at people that grew up without Jesus and we just kind of look down on them and say, they're just real rough, you know, they're just all living in sin over there, they're just doing their own thing, they don't know the commandments of the Lord, not to do this, that, and the other, and they're just living wild. But as far as God is concerned, he is just as concerned with us having a Cain attitude, being a member of his family, and having a stinky attitude and being harmful to others as he is anybody else. So we just can't think that way, where we're better or more holy than anybody else, because it's all about the sacrifice of Jesus. It's the only thing that levels the playing field. Cain was in love with the curse, though. He was in love with the world, just like his mama. Because at the end of the book of Genesis, at the first couple chapters of Genesis, when God deals with Adam and Eve, is he kicks them out of the garden and he shows them about the sacrifice of the sheep. Abel embraced the life of the shepherd and life with the sheep. He understood the Lord's heart. And he understood that he wanted to live a lifestyle of caring and loving for others. Being a shepherd means laying your life down for the sheep, means caring for them night and day. Whereas Adam and Cain, they kept the same farming mindset, where even though the Lord had judged Adam and kicked him out of the garden, Adam still did the same stuff outside the garden as he did in it. That was what he knew. He just kept doing it. And Cain walked in the ways of his father, and that he created his own fields and worked with it. And I'm not saying that God is against agriculture or farming. That's not what the Bible is trying to say.